shavings, probably because the walls were made of little mud bricks with straw poking out. She sat in her usual red leather chair with a nail head trim.
"I've applied some healing ointment to those burns."
I looked at my hands, thinly layered in a goop like aloe vera. Already I could see the red burns diminishing. The phone rang, and Miss Cab picked it up with a sigh.
"On vacation until further notice," she said, then set the receiver back down. "Tell me what happened, Zane."
Miss Cab's voice sounded like a slow-mo recording. I stared up at the ceiling fan for I don't know how long, and then reality came crashing down on me. According to some stupid prophecy, I was going to release the god of death, darkness, and destruction into the world. I'd cleared a path to the cave, setting everything in motion. That demon runner, it had said my name and killed Rosie. She was really gone. Tears stung my eyes. Miss Cab folded her wrinkled hands in her lap.
"Zane?"
I sat up, studying Miss Cab. "How'd you know I was out there? And how did you drive blind?"
"All will be revealed in time," she said. "First, though..."
The teapot screamed, making me jump.
"Hold on," Miss Cab said.
She went into the kitchen and brought back 2 cups of brew. I wasn't in the mood for tea. Actually, I was never in the mood for the stuff, but I knew better than to argue with Miss Cab, so I took a sip. It was worse than licking a dirty ashtray. I scrunched up my nose and stuck out my tongue.
"It'll heal your insides and help you relax," she said. "You took quite a beating. I told you to stay away from that dreadful place."
If only I'd listened, Rosie would still be alive. Miss Cab took off her glasses. Her eyes were milky white with no irises.
"What happened at the volcano, Zane? Why were you with that Nawal? What did she tell you?"
A bitter anger pulsed beneath my skin, and I wanted to say, "You're a psychic, figure it out." But instead I said, "Rosie's gone." Miss Cab shook her head.
"I'm sorry about that. Hand me that box next to you, would you?"
My hands trembled as I gave her the black shoe-sized box. I'd never seen it around the house before. It was light and made of rough balsa wood. On its lid were Maya hieroglyphs painted in red, a bug-eyed skull, a large beaked bird, and a pointy-tongued snake. Miss Cab opened the box slowly. When I saw what was inside, my stomach lurched and I thought I might throw up. There were 2 rows of eyeballs. Yeah, that's right. Real live eyeballs. She leaned over the box, plucked out her existing eyes like they were contact lenses, and replaced them with a new pair. She shut and opened her eyelids, revealing new gray irises. She placed the plain white ones in the box. I was definitely going to be sick.
"Miss Cab, you..." "Calm down, Zane. Drink your tea."
So this was what shock felt like. Pure, buzzing, sucking wind shock. I could only nod and blink. I blinked a lot, as if I were one blink away from all this being some bad nightmare I was going to wake from, safe in my bed with Rosie next to me. I sipped mindlessly at the nasty tea. Miss Cab's new gray eyes followed me. Even though the tea tasted awful, it was making me feel calmer. "Your eyes still look creepy," I said. And as soon as the words were out, I could hardly believe I'd said something so rude.
"Sorry, I..."
Miss Cab adjusted the belt on her flowery dress and chuckled.
"It's a side effect of the healing tea. Makes you speak the truth. Now, tell me every detail."
My brain was all fuzzy, but I couldn't stop the words from spilling from my mouth. I might have even told Miss Cab that I thought Brooks was beautiful. After I spat out the dreadful facts, she nodded and stood.
So it really has begun.
I had a million and one questions, but the only ones that mattered right now were focused on my dog. I need to find Rosie. Why'd she disappear like that? Miss Cab gave me a sad, kind smile, like she really did feel bad about Rosie.
Magic is so mercurial, she said. One can never fully gauge its temperament or understand its logic. But if a demon runner killed her, well, she belongs to the underworld now. Oh, dear, you look green.
The world tilted.
I don't feel so good.
Then I tossed my cookies all over her tile floor. She didn't even seem to mind, simply patted me on the back. As she cleaned up the mess, she told me that the healing slash truth tea makes everyone throw up. When I was done, I felt physically better, but emotionally worse, and more confused than ever. I sat down on the sofa and rubbed the back of my neck.
I don't get it. What do you have to do with all of this? Did you see that demon coming?
I swallowed the words I really wanted to say. And if you did, why didn't you help me before my dog got killed? Miss Cab walked over to the bookcase and brought out a long scroll of yellowed paper from the shelf.
I'm a Nick Wachinel, she said. Am I a seer?
Brooks had called the great soothsayer a seer, too. No wonder Miss Cab worked as a psychic. But why was I suddenly meeting all these Maya? I thought about the prophecy, a powerful innocent with ancient blood. I'd been so focused on the word powerful, I hadn't considered my having ancient blood. Was my dad Maya? Then I remembered the last thing Brooks said to me. You're a supernatural, too. I didn't even know what that meant. My head spun as Miss Cab continued.
It's my job to watch over you.
And don't look at me like that. I was about to ask, like what, when she added,
So what if I don't always see the future clearly? It's these blasted eyes. I'm going to have a serious talk with my supplier.
She shook her head, and her left eye drifted a little.
The point is, I came as soon as I got the vision of you fighting a demon runner. And as for how I could drive, my foresight might be compromised sometimes. But my regular eyesight is just fine, thank you very much.
You mean those white eyes are fake? I couldn't believe she'd fooled me all this time.
I wear them in public as a cover. Don't want it getting around that I'm a Nick Wachinel. That could be dangerous.
She put the scroll down on the coffee table.
And they haven't heard me professionally. People seem to have more respect for blind psychics for whatever reason.
Wait, did you say you're supposed to watch over me? No offense, Miss Cab, but, you don't seem like someone who could protect me. I mean, she was almost as short as my mom and older than her by like 30 years.
You're safe, aren't you?
At least for now. Safe?
That demon took Rosie, and it dragged me across the cave to make me set Puke Face free. Yes, well, sometimes I can't be sure if my visions are happening in real time or the distant future. It's called a delayed response. But at least I found you when I did, or that girl would have had you releasing Apuch into this world.
No, I frowned. Brooks was here to warn me and to take the artifact far away, to stop the prophecy.
Nawals can be tricksters, Zane. They can't be trusted.
I thought about that. Brooks had said loyalty was in her DNA. She had helped me fight the demon runner, hadn't she? But I still didn't know much about her or her so-called quest. And if her quest was so important, why did she insist that we leave the cave? Had she felt so rotten about Rosie she couldn't go on? Or was she really scared of more demon runners showing up? Miss Cab stuck her finger on her left eye and rolled it slightly until the iris was back in the center.
You might get sick again later, depending on how many lies are inside you,
she said, matter-of-factly, as if she were describing flu symptoms. How many lies are in me? I haven't lied.
Ms. Cab ignored my outburst and went on. Also, you're going to have to keep a low profile. Where there's one demon runner, there are bound to be more. And when they find out you've killed one of their own, ay Dios.
She shook her head casually, like I'd broken a teacup instead of stabbed the monster.
Oh, God. Just thinking about the demon runner made me feel sick all over again.
We need to run, my voice quivered. Get my mom and Hondo and go far away, like Alaska or Tibet or something.
Definitely somewhere with no volcanoes. Miss Cab walked to the window nonchalantly, pulled the lace curtain back, and peered into the night.
I'm afraid that won't do us any good, Zane. You see, the prophecy of fire is powerful, more powerful than your will.
She must have seen the confusion on my face, because she came over and sat next to me.
It's like sleep. No amount of running or hiding is going to keep it from finding you. It will always come, no matter what.
I didn't even try to understand her words with the logic part of my brain. Clearly, facing this new reality was going to take something more, something I wasn't sure I had in me, a belief in the impossible. I threw my head back against the sofa and rubbed my eyes.
Why me?
I'm just some kid who doesn't even matter.
Actually, you're not just some kid. You're...
She hesitated.
A supernatural?
Yeah, Brooks told me. What does that even mean? Am I a Nawal, too?
If Ms. Cab was surprised, she didn't show it. She patted my short leg and said slowly, It means you're only part human.
The words reached my ears, but it took a few more seconds for them to penetrate my mind.
I know it's shocking for your human side to take in, she said, so I'll give you a few minutes to absorb it.
A few minutes was really 5 seconds, because she launched right into the next part, and what she told me turned my world upside down and inside out.
Chapter 9. Part human?
Yes, Miss Cab said.
Your father is a supernatural.
And your leg?
It's defective for one reason only. Supernaturals and humans don't mix. It so often ends badly. Bum legs, terrible eyesight, missing fingers or toes, anger management issues.
I realized in that moment that the human brain is built for only so much shock. It's like trying to cram into a bathroom stall with 10 other guys. Pretty soon the walls are going to come down.
On the plus side, Ms. Cab said, your supernatural heritage is the reason the poison didn't kill you.
I perked up at that. Maybe being a supernatural would give me other awesome powers. Powers I could use to get Rosie back. I needed to know what I was dealing with here. What exactly is a supernatural? And who is my dad?
I have no idea who your father is, so don't ask. But he could be any number of supernatural beings, she added. A Nawal, a demon, a spirit guide, a dwarf.
A dwarf. Perfect. My dad could be a Maya supernatural dwarf.
Does my mom know?
My voice rose a few notches. I mean, that she fell in love with some kind of... I didn't have the right word. Creature? Thing? Monster? No way would Mom fall for a knuckle-dragging hairy Brillo pad.
She knows your father was a supernatural, but not about the prophecy of fire. If she were to have that knowledge, it could be very dangerous for her. A mother's love is the most illogical of all types of love. If she knew, she'd do anything to protect you, and that could end up backfiring on her, you, and the world, which is why I'm here. But if you want details about your father, you'll have to ask her. I'm certainly not privy to the contents of her heart.
And Hondo?
Clueless.
That figured.
Then I thought about Mr. Ortiz. Was he some kind of Maya protector, too? When I asked Ms. Cab, she laughed.
Heavens, no. That man is all human.
I didn't know if that made me feel better or worse. My neck started to sweat. Why is all this happening to me now? Ms. Cab threaded her fingers on her lap.
It was meant to be. Why do you think you happen to live next to the place where Apuch is imprisoned?
Bad luck?
You chose this place. Or, I should say, the prophecy's magic did.
But I wasn't even born when we moved here.
Your mother was pregnant with you. Even then, the magic drew you here by influencing your mother's choices. Stay with me, Zane.
She fanned my face with her hand.
This isn't exactly where I wanted to be, out here in the middle of the desert with old Ortiz fawning all over me, but a seer understands duty above all else.
What, you're like Secret Service for hire?
I am a descendant of the great soothsayer Secret Keepers. It's my ancestral legacy, she said, sitting taller. I'm protecting a secret that I and those who went before me are bound to keep.
Heat flashed through me. And you never thought to tell me any of this?
It wasn't time.
Why is it time now?
When the Demon Runner escalated things so close to the eclipse, I knew the prophecy was beginning to unfold.
I didn't tell her I was the one who escalated things when I cleared the path to the cave so old Pukeface could send his stupid distress signals to his lame-brained demon runners. I scratched my head. So let me get this straight. All these Maya, you, Brooks, the demon runner, are here because the god of death has been living in a magical artifact in my volcano for hundreds of years, waiting for me to let him out?
Yes. Haven't you ever wondered why you can see so clearly in the dark?
Ms. Cab asked.
How did you...
She let out a long breath.
I know everything about you, Zane Obispo. I was there when you were born.
I wanted to run home and confront my mom about my supernatural dad to see if she could give me any more details. But right now, I had a more important goal. Okay, maybe two goals. Find Rosie, and stay alive.
I sat up straighter. I need to go to Xibalba. Can you help me?
Ms. Cab shook her head vigorously.
You can't go to the land of the dead, Zane.
Because I'm not dead?
Because it's too big a risk. They don't exactly throw out the welcome mat for the living. And if you did show up, well, the underworld would suck you in and never let you go. The inhabitants simply adore flesh. It's quite a delicacy, you know.
I held my hand up in sickened protest. I get it.
I'm afraid you're going to have to accept the fact that Rosie's gone.
Ms. Cab looked genuinely sorry, but her words made me want to scream. Rosie was not gone. She couldn't be. I swallowed the lump in my throat.
Fine, I managed.
Then you could bring her back. I mean, you're a powerful seer. Yeah, I know it was a stretch. I mean, they might need someone with your skill set, right? You could use that to maybe negotiate or something.
Zane, we have to focus on what's most pressing, keeping you safe.
I sprang off the couch and started to pace like a maniac. Rosie needs me. I don't care about staying safe. This wasn't happening. I knew it was selfish, maybe even stupid, but I couldn't get Rosie off my mind. I remembered the day I found her and how I'd pulled stickers out of her paws and given her a bath. She'd been trembling all over, so I'd rolled her in a towel and held her close and promised I'd never let anyone hurt her again. I was a liar. Miss Cab unrolled the scroll she had placed on the coffee table. Pointing to a series of odd symbols, she said,
Tomorrow is the solar eclipse, the day of reckoning, the day of numbers, It's when the prophecy of fire will finally unfold. We may need a good escape route.
I wiped my sweaty, sticky palms across my jeans. But we still have a few hours left. There must be something we can do to get Rosie back.
I don't want to give you false hope, Zane. Even if I could get her back, she wouldn't be the same dog. She'd be...
She hesitated.
Changed.
Changed how?
I don't know. But I've seen a few souls brought back, and they were never the same.
So it can happen. I didn't care if Rosie was a little different. I was different, too. I couldn't stand the idea of my dog being stuck in such a terrible place.
Please, can't you try?
Zane. Miss Cab raised a single brow and shook her head.
I'd have to travel to another realm and leave you unprotected. It would go against my purpose and my nature. I'm sorry. Rosie is not my concern. You are. And tomorrow, when your destiny is fulfilled, I must be here.
I was getting pretty sick of people telling me I was going to set this puke monster free. I didn't care about him or the stupid prophecy of fire. Why would I release Apooch knowing he wants to destroy the world? And what's his deal anyway? How come he hates humans enough to want to kill them all?
It started eons ago. The creator gods, namely Huracan and Kukulkan, were very powerful and wanted to make creatures to worship them.
Right, I said. I'd read this creation story before. They made the first humans out of mud.
And the humans were weak and useless, she added. Couldn't even think. So the gods destroyed them. Then they made a different batch of humans out of wood, but they were dumb as, well, wood. So,
she ran her finger across her throat like a blade. The gods sure liked destroying things, didn't they?
They wanted to get it right. To create a human that could think and mark time and keep records.
Remembering the next part of the story, I smirked. So they made them out of corn? Made perfect sense.
Miss Cab nodded. Those humans were smart and could understand too much. So the gods sent a great fog to obscure some of their knowledge.
First they want smart humans, then the humans are too smart, I grumbled. Geez, these gods have serious issues.
You gods could really use some psychoanalysis. They hate competition.
How could humans ever compete against the gods?
Have you ever heard of the Hero Twins?
The brothers who tricked and killed some lords of the underworld? They had gotten 4 whole pages and 3 illustrations in my book.
Those lords, she flapped a hand dismissively, were weak-minded monsters ruled by Apooch.
Yeah, the hero part of the twin story had seemed a little overblown. Basically, they wanted revenge because a few stupid Xibalba lords had killed their father and uncle.
Miss Cab went on. After the twins tricked and killed the lords, legend has it that the twins then defeated Apooch himself. Humans loved them for it and then saw the underworld as weak. Then humans stopped fearing the god of death, and there's never a good outcome when people ignore the gods.
So Apooch wants to destroy the world for the 4th time and make new humans that will pay attention to him?
Something like that.
Miss Cab studied the paper spread across the table.
When you release Apooch at the moment of the eclipse, he's going to be good and mad and out for vengeance. In his rage, he is likely to thirst for your blood.
Hang on. Why would he want to kill the one guy who finally let him out?
I didn't say he was logical. Imagine being cooped up for over 400 years.
It would suck, sure, but I was pretty certain it wouldn't make me thirsty for blood. More like an extra grande chocolate milkshake.
So do you have some sort of magical dagger that kills gods or something?
Miss Cab's eyes went wide.
Heavens no. My job isn't to kill him, Zane. I'm not an assassin.
But we can't let him destroy the whole world. I mean, everyone would die. Mom, Hondo, Mr. O, Brooks. I felt sick. Miss Cab inhaled sharply through her nose.
It's not my job to stop his reign of terror, Zane. My ancestral legacy is very clear. Keep the prophecy secret and make sure you're safe.
Don't you care about the world?
My ancestral legacy is very clear, she repeated in an annoying tone, like a robot. And besides, I don't have the power to kill Apooch. Only the gods do.
Then let's call them right now. You have a direct line, right?
No, Zane, I do not have a direct line.
Miss Cab rolled her eyes.
And even if I did, I wouldn't call them. That's not my job. I am not to interfere with or do anything other than fulfill my ancestral legacy.
I don't know, Miss Cab, I said, trying to sound calm. Seems like they'd want to know the dude they locked up forever ago is getting ready for parole.
It is not my duty.
I held up my hand to stop her. Right. I get it. Ancestral legacy. Fine. If she wasn't going to alert the gods and she wasn't going to off the guy, then how was she going to make sure I kept all 8 pints of blood in my body? Ms. Cab's face was tight and pale.
Soon after Apooch is free, the gods will know it, believe me. Then they can worry about how to deal with him.
So how are you going to stop him from, you know, killing me?
He's a god, Ms. Cab, I said, as if she needed a reminder. I will bring him an offering.
Offering? The word practically got stuck in my throat. Like a present?
Like fresh blood.
I was starting to see white spots. You don't mean like a live animal or a person, right? She stroked her chin, thinking.
He prefers snakes.
Seriously? The dude drinks snake blood? Maybe someone should make him a carne burrito smothered with green chile, I thought. He'd never go back to blood again.
Miss Cab stood. We need to focus. You must be strong now.
Understand? Strong? I just killed a demon runner, which only reminded me of Rosie. I'd failed her, and I vowed to myself that I would make things right again. I stood, locking eyes with Miss Cab. I'll help with the prophecy and the offering or whatever, but after I get Rosie back. You're her only chance, and if I lose her, then I won't be the same. My voice cracked. Please, Ms. Cab, I'm begging you.
You would risk everything for a dog?
I didn't bother to explain that Rosie was more than a dog to me. We were one unit. I simply nodded. Miss Cab pinched the bridge of her nose and gave a deep sigh.
I'll investigate, reach out to some old friends who help souls cross over, see if they've seen Rosie. Perhaps they can watch out for her. But I won't go far, and I'll be back before the eclipse tomorrow.
It was better than nothing. At least I could get a report and then figure out what to do next.
But you must promise me not to go near that volcano or that girl in the meantime, Miss Cab said. Brooks had no business coming here. You are not to trust her, do you hear me? Stay inside your house until tomorrow. If you can do that, then I will do my part.
Deal. But then I wondered why I was in danger if the demon runners wanted me to release the stinking one. What had Brooks said about trying to make things right? And how could I turn my back on her? She'd risked her life in that cave to attack the demon runner. Miss Cab mumbled something under her breath as she studied the paper. I looked down at the sheet. At first it reminded me of a crinkled bus map with crisscrossing lines in all different colors. Then I saw a dozen or so blue squares that started flashing as if they were on a computer screen. I'd never seen anything like it.
This is a rare item, Zane. Most gateway maps have been destroyed. Like a near-extinct species, there are only a few left. She adjusted a bobby pin in her hair. Those who possess one keep it secret. Do you understand?
Yes, I understand.
These flashing squares mark the gateways to the different layers of the world, Ms. Cab said. They change every day. See how this one is flashing faster than the others? It means it's going to close here and open somewhere else very soon. Look for one that's blinking more slowly. So how do you know where these places are? There weren't any names on the map, only strange unrecognizable symbols, hieroglyphs of some sort.
That's easy. The map corresponds with the cosmos, and it shows the four directions, east, west, north, south, in four different colors. But you have to be trained in reading the lines and the various glyphs. Right now, the closest.
Her finger traced one of the black lines to a bright blue square that was barely flashing.
Is in Lola's taco shop in Tula Rosa.
There's a gateway to another world in a taco shop? Ms. Cab blinked as if that was the stupidest question she'd ever heard.
Yes, and it will deliver me to the sixth layer of the Ceiba tree, also known as the World Tree. From there, I'll reach out to some contacts. It's been a long time since I've traveled in this way, so I'm a bit rusty.
I read about the Ceiba Tree. It starts in the underworld, grows through the middle of the world, that would be Earth, and reaches all the way up to paradise. But I never imagined it was a real thing. I started to say something else when she held up her hand.
No more questions tonight. Your head is likely to explode. Now you must repeat your promise to me.
I never liked the sound of promises I might not be able to keep.
Repeat after me. I, Zane Obispo, she began, promise not to leave my house for any reason until Ms. Cab returns tomorrow.
Good thing tomorrow was Saturday and I didn't have to go to school.
What if a demon runner comes to my house? Can I leave then?
She tapped her foot impatiently.
Those dim-witted monsters are too busy duplicating like cockroaches, probably crawling all over Apuchi's resting place. Trust me, they're waiting for you to come to them.
So that was a totally gross image. They could wait until the end of time. No way was I going near that volcano before Rosie was back. Prophecy or no prophecy.
Speaking of those monsters, I said, how come my mom couldn't see the demon runner the other night, and I could? It's a demon thing. No human can see them unless those monsters want to be seen. It's the same way with gods. They too are camouflage kings. You were able to see the demon runner because you're a
supernatural, right? No way was I ever going to get used to that idea.
Now, Ms. Cab clapped once, I've put a bit of magical protection around your house so no other supernaturals can get in, which is why it's the only place you'll be safe. Do you hear me?
I said the words she wanted me to say. Ms. Cab walked me to my doorstep and made sure I went inside. As I started to close the door, I jerked it back open and said,
Hey, Miss Cab.
Yes?
Buena suerte.
With a huff, she said,
Seers don't need luck. Just remember your promise.
Chapter 10. The house was quiet. It took me a few seconds to remember it was Friday night, and that meant Mom was helping Hondo at the bank. 8 o'clock. They wouldn't be home for another hour or so. I had a million questions for her, starting with, who the heck is my dad? I was hoping he wasn't the demon, because that would mean my life was officially over. Ms. Cab had told me that supernaturals come in many different forms. Some could be normal-looking, even handsome like Hollywood actors or NFL quarterbacks. Question number 2, how come you never told me I'm only part human? Just thinking those words made me want to jump out of my own skin. And the third question, were you ever going to tell me? I went to my bedroom and stood in front of my closet, trying to get up the nerve to open the door and retrieve my Maya book. What if one of those demon illustrations came to life and jumped off the page? Get a hold of yourself, I muttered. It's only a book. After I fished it out of the dirty clothes pile, I sat on the edge of my bed and opened the book slowly. I started reading from the beginning. Some pretty treacherous stuff was described in there, but nothing as bad as Xibalba, the underworld, a.k.a. the place of fear, a.k.a. where Rosie was. My stomach turned. The book confirmed everything Ms. Cab had told me, including that Apuch was the jefe of all of Hell's lords. I took some notes to help me keep them all straight, though I hated to write their creepy names down. Let's see what I can remember. Flying Scab and Blood Gatherer. Sicken people's blood. Gross! Pus Demon and Jaundice Demon. Make people's bodies swell up. Seriously, who named these guys? Bone Staff and Skull Staff. Turn humans into skeletons. Sweeping Demon and Stabbing Demon. Stab you to death. Wing and Packstrap. Make people die by coughing up blood until they drown in it. Definitely a worse way to die than Hondo's suggestion of being thrown into a vat of acid. If those names weren't nasty enough, the pictures were even worse, and I'm not talking about a bad hair day. I'm talking rotting teeth, bloated guts, bleeding ribs, and bulging eyes. The demon runners were basically these guys' hitmen. I kept turning the pages, and as I read about all the horrors of Xibalba, my insides collapsed slowly. I should have been the one to have to cross Blood or Pus River, not Rosie. The house felt empty and awful without her. It was hard to even remember a time she wasn't here, bouncing, wagging her tail, and dropping a ball at my feet so we could play fetch. Did I tell you how easy she was to train? Never jumped on the furniture or begged for food at the table. And when I was sick, she lay in my bed like she was sick too. Rosie was the truest friend I ever had, better than any human, and I couldn't protect her. I couldn't run fast enough, kill the demon runner fast enough, do anything fast enough. All because of my stupid leg. Which, let's get real, doctors couldn't fix because I was the son of some monster. I took a deep breath as I turned the page to Apuch, Maya, god of death, disaster, and darkness. According to the book, ancient Maya were terrified of death, and I didn't blame them if they had to spend eternity with this guy. His picture took up a whole page. He looked like a bloated zombie with decomposing gray skin with nasty black spots, and he had a dark, twisted smile. That wasn't even the grossest part. He wore this weird helmet that had eyes hanging off it, the eyes of the people he'd recently killed. Around his fat neck was a red cape made of human skin, and stitched to the hood was an owl's head. My eyes froze on that image. It looked exactly like the black yellow-eyed owl that had whispered to me and shook me up earlier. The prophecy has begun. My pulse pounded in my ears, but I couldn't look away. It was like driving by an accident you know is going to be awful, and you don't want to look, but you do anyway. Apparently, the mangy black owl was Puke's evil pet, Muwan, which acted as his messenger and spy. Could she have helped the demon runners find him at the volcano? In the days when Apuch roamed free, he used to go to the houses of the sick and dying and wait outside, his rusty laugh echoing in the wind. The guy was about as evil as you could get. I slammed the book closed. No way would I ever let him out. I didn't care what the great soothsayer thought she saw, or how strong the magic was. It could call me all it wanted, but I wasn't going to answer. That was it. No more wasting time. I hated to break my promise to Ms. Cab about staying put, but I couldn't wait another second to get the truth out of my mom. A minute later, I crossed the street toward Mr. O's house. It was the biggest one on the road, two stories with a red tile roof, huge windows, and a giant stone wall that surrounded the place. But the best part
was the spiral staircase that led to the roof, where he let me keep my telescope. In the summer, we'd hang out up there, eat tacos, drink virgin strawberry margaritas, and stare at the constellations. I tried to teach him their names, but he never cared about the details. He simply wanted to see the stars. A pack of coyotes cackled in the distance. They sounded like a group of witches. I kept my eyes open for demon runners, but even more open for Brooks. I was hoping she would slip out of a shadow, okay, maybe not in a surprise attack kind of way, but in a hi, sorry I bailed kind of way. I admit it. I really wanted to see her again. I had so many questions for her, but mostly, how did she know about the prophecy? And where had she gone? When Mr. O opened the door, he stepped aside, gesturing for me to come in. The smell of fresh roasted green chile wafted from inside. My stomach growled.
Dieter's ready, he said.
Then I remembered. He was supposed to show me his discovery tonight. I'd forgotten all about it. I tugged up the zipper of my jacket. Sorry, Mr. O, but can you drive me into town?
Now? The caldillo is ready. Ed my secreto. I'm so excited to show you.
Can we do it tomorrow? I need to talk to my mom. We were in the car 2 minutes later.
Are you in trouble?
He asked as we drove down off the mesa's dirt roads and into the valley. I almost laughed. Yeah, I was knee-deep in the stuff without a shovel. All of a sudden, I wondered if going to the bank was such a good idea. Maybe I should have waited for Mom to get home. We parked next to Mom's little Honda at the Land of Enchantment Bank. The lot was dark and eerily quiet. You can leave me here, I told Mr. O. I'll go home with Mom.
It must be muy importante for you to come here, he said. Maybe I should wait.
Nah, that's okay.
Just until you get inside, Mr. O insisted.
I got out of the car slowly, suddenly unsure of myself. Heaps of worry filled my head. What if she didn't want to talk about it? What if she lied? What if she told me the truth, and it was that I was part demon? What if I didn't really want to know? Did that make me a wuss? I lumbered to the glass doors and peered inside. Mom was vacuuming the lobby in a dancing kind of way. She had on earbuds and was singing to some song I couldn't hear. I banged my old cruddy cane on the locked door. She kept vacuuming. I pressed my face to the glass. Where was Hondo? Wasn't he supposed to be here? He'd probably gotten sidetracked by some girl, or maybe he'd signed up for a wrestling match down at Chachi's bar. It wouldn't be the first time he'd bailed on Mom for a better deal, only to end up with a black eye. I looked over my shoulder at Mr. Ortiz. He smiled and waved. The bank was tucked away from the road beneath a canopy of huge oaks. If it weren't for the neon sign, it would be easy to miss the place. When I turned back, Mom was opening the door and tugging her earbuds loose.
Zane? Is everything okay?
Okay? No, everything was not okay. Rosie was gone. I'd killed a demon runner and spit up a million lies all over my magical neighbor's floor. Definitely not okay. But all I said was, we need to talk. Mom waved at Mr. Ortiz, then looked back at me.
Is there an emergency?
You could say that. Where's Hondo?
We needed some bleach wipes.
What's wrong?
I stepped inside.
Why didn't you tell me I was only part human? Mom's face fell. But to her credit, she didn't walk away or try to lie.
How did you find out?
I finished her sentence, feeling a little bolder.
Miss Cab, she said softly. I was supposed to be the one. She promised me.
When, Mom? When were you going to tell me? I gripped my cane and took a deep breath. Please tell me I'm not part demon. A hideous cry sounded outside. Mom and I looked out the window, and on top of Mr. O's car stood a strange figure. It was 2 feet tall and looked like some kind of goblin with patches of dark hair poking out of its abnormally large head. It peered at me with yellowish eyes and a sinister smile, and between its pointed teeth, it clutched a dagger. Mom grabbed hold of me, pushing me behind her as she locked the front door. "Mom, we can't leave Mr. Ortiz out there." "Something tells me it's not here for him." I looked back, and the thing was gone. Mr. O was nodding off, oblivious. Mom grabbed me by the shoulders. "Zane, do you trust me?" That was not the right question. But I guess even after everything, she was still my mom, so yeah, I trusted her. "We need to get to the car and get out of here," she said. "So I need you to be faster than you've ever been." My mom was freaking me out. I'd never seen her like this, so stern, so commanding, so afraid. As she reached for the front door, the lights went out in the bank, and we stood in total darkness. Mom jumped. I looked around. Past the lobby, there was nothing but desks, chairs, teller windows, and eerie shadows cast from the moonlight on the trees outside. "What is that thing?" I whispered. "An Alush," she whispered. She pronounced it Alush. "And it's very dangerous." "Yeah, I got that just by seeing its nasty face and sharp teeth." Mom's breathing filled the darkness. Then came the sound of small but heavy footsteps approaching, and I suddenly felt like I was in a horror movie, about to get chopped into bits. "It's inside," Mom whispered. I tried to open the front door, but for some reason it wouldn't budge. "What do we do?" "Run!" And with that, Mom was dragging me through the main part of the bank. "Get to the cage," she cried. We raced toward the back wall. I knew what she was thinking. If we could lock ourselves inside the safety deposit box cage, then maybe we stood a chance against the little monster. In the same instant, I heard Hondo's voice behind us. He had just come in from the parking lot. "What's going on in here?" "Hondo!" Mom cried. "Get out!" A terrible wind whipped up outside, hard and fast, and a tree branch crashed into a window, breaking the glass. Lamps flew off desks. Paintings fell from the walls. I grabbed the edge of a table for balance. The creature stepped into our path right before we reached the cage door.
"You cannot run," it said in a high, screechy voice.
Up close, I could see the bulbous nose and the gray, sharp teeth. Its skin was pitted and puffy, and it had a lazy eye that roamed too far to the left. The wind blew its dark, mangy hair back.
"What do you want?" I asked, jabbing my cane in its direction.
"Please," Mom cried. "Leave him alone. He's only a boy."
"He's more than a boy," it said.
Hondo appeared from the lobby and leaped on the creature, letting out a warrior cry like I'd never heard.
"Get out of here," he screamed at us.
"Hondo!"
I hurled myself on top of him, but Mom pulled me off. While my uncle tussled with the Alush, she hauled me back through the bank and out the front doors, then stuffed me into her car. Mr. O waved at us as we sped away.
"Hold on tight," Mom commanded me.
She gunned down the road. Only problem was, the Honda couldn't go past 60.
"We have to go back. We can't leave Hondo there."
Mom ignored me, shaking her head and mumbling words I couldn't hear. Then came a thud on the roof. The thing had caught up to us.
But how?
And where was Hondo? Mom whipped the car around a median, doing a 180 like some kind of pro stunt driver. But the creature hung on, laughing a sick sort of cackle that was definitely going to give me nightmares.
"Leave us alone!" I shouted, banging my fist against the roof.
Barreling down the road, Mom took the first turn on two tires.
"I can't shake it off."
The creature climbed onto the windshield. Its eyes glowed, and I decided it might have been only a hair less ugly than the Demon Runner. They were definitely neck and neck in the contest for the nastiest looking thing on the planet. We were going max speed on a back valley road, whizzing past farmland and cow pastures. When the heck had she learned to drive like this? Suddenly, the engine choked. We came to a crawling stop next to a field of sleeping cows.
"You can't escape me,"
the Alush said through the glass. Then it hopped down to the ground. I heard footsteps on gravel outside the car. Mom reached under her seat and pulled out a crowbar.
Whoa! Did I even know this, mujer?
Wait here! She opened her door and jumped out.
No way!
But Mom was outside before I could stop her.
You cannot have my son!
She stood in the headlights, swinging that crowbar like a champ.
Mom!
I tumbled from the car.
Run, Zane! She hollered.
Run? Was she kidding? Even if I could run, what was I supposed to do? Hide between the cows? I got to my feet, holding my cane in front of me like a sword.
Come out, you mangy dwarf!
From the shadows, the thing pounced. It leaped onto Mom's back and held the knife to her throat. Her eyes were wild with fear.
Let her go, I shouted. She doesn't have anything to do with this.
The Alush dangled its legs casually over Mom's shoulders, like it was just some kid on a stroll through the park.
Please, Mom begged. Leave my son alone.
The Alush jerked Mom's head back by her hair and mimicked her desperate voice.
Leave my son alone.
Then it focused its wicked beady eyes on me.
What are you going to do?
The creature pretended to tremble.
Hit me with your cane?
It smiled.
My job is becoming way too easy. Sent to kill a half-breed, nothing of a...
Mom growled.
That half-breed is the son of...
A loud ki-yar interrupted her, and Brooks the hawk swooped down, picking up the monster by the back of its neck. It kicked and screamed, clawing at her with its gnarled hands. Brooks shook it hard like it was her mouse prey and she was trying to break its neck. The Alush snarled as Brooks took it higher and higher, spinning in circles so fast that even I got dizzy. I raced toward my mom. Her neck was bleeding, but the cut wasn't deep.
Are you okay?
I asked. She pressed her fingers to her wound.
I'm fine. Just a scratch.
Brooks let out a horrible screech, but I couldn't see her anywhere.
Was she all right?
I hobbled across the field, weaving between the cows, wishing I could fly too. Then came the sound of bones breaking. Monster bones, I hoped. Chapter 11. Brooks circled above and the moonlight caught the tips of her widespread wings. It was an awesome sight. Mom glanced around.
What happened to the Alush?
Brooks took care of it, I answered with a goofy sort of smile. Ms. Cab had said Nawals were tricksters, but she had to be wrong, because Brooks had just saved our lives. Mom looked utterly confused.
The girl from school?
She's sort of a hawk. I pointed to the sky.
Hawk?
Mom looked up, mouth agape. She's a shapeshifter.
Shapeshifter? Okay.
Mom narrowed her eyes.
What's going on, Zane? What aren't you telling me?
What was I not telling her? How is it moms always know how to turn the tables? Before I could answer, Brooks landed in hawk form next to us. The air shimmered, and she was human again.
You guys okay?
I nodded.
How'd you find us?
Brooks blushed, actually blushed.
Hawks have exceptional hearing and eyesight, superior to every animal in the world, she said.
Makes tracking pretty easy. She'd been following me and didn't want to admit it. Being the nice guy I am, I let her off the hook. I mean, since my mom was there and everything.
Thank you,
Mom stuttered, looking a little stunned.
You totally got rid of that thing, I said.
The little monsters hate heights, she said casually. Best way to take care of them is to... Are you sure you want to know? I rolled my eyes. I'd killed a demon runner, or had she forgotten? Brooks said. I snapped its neck and dropped it into a den of coyotes.
Okay, kids, help me out here. I'm lost, said Mom. What's going on?
Brooks looked at me warily, but she didn't need to worry. I wasn't going to spill. Ms. Cab was right. Mom would do anything to save me. She'd risked her own life with that psychotic dwarf thing. The less she knew, the safer she'd be. I don't know. The lie tasted worse than all the ones I'd thrown up earlier. But we should go back to the bank, make sure Hondo's okay. Mom scowled. You're going home where you'll be safe. I started to argue, but Brooks shook her head. Hondo's fine. They don't want him. How do you know? I asked. That thing attacked him. It could have killed him. I was following it, Brooks said. Hondo held his own, which is super impressive because Alushas might be small, but they can be vicious. Relieved, I got into the car, sliding into the back seat with Brooks. Mom turned the key, and the engine started right up. Did that thing temporarily freeze the engine or something? I asked as Mom drove the 2 miles toward home. She told us that Alushas were magical and masters at playing games with humans. Okay, so she knew a thing or two about Maya creatures. What else did she know? Brooks crossed her arms and whispered, They're vile little monsters, created by someone for a specific purpose. So the question is, I gazed out the window. Who's trying to kill me? Why would it come after you, Zane? Mom's voice trembled. Brooks offered. Mistaken identity. Happens all the time. I actually think it was after me. I immediately saw what she was doing, and I was impressed she could think on her feet like that. She didn't want my mom to worry or get in the middle of this. That made two of us. Okay, then why would an Alush be after you? Even though the question was directed at Brooks, Mom looked at me in the rearview mirror, and I could see the doubt in her eyes. Brooks fabricated some big story about how her dad traded antiques around the world, and the Alush's owner had accused him of selling her a fake Maya death mask. It all went south from there. Brooks got separated from her dad the night it all went down, and she hadn't been able to find him afterward. Now she was on the run. She was seriously convincing. Mom's shoulders sagged. So you have no one? Brooks looked out the window. I'm trying to find the only real family I have left. Something told me that wasn't a lie. My head was swimming in a million directions. So someone had sent the monster to kill me, to prevent me from releasing Apooch. But who? Hadn't Ms. Cab said that only she, some dead seers, and now Brooks knew about the ancient prophecy? I wanted to ask Mom to finish her sentence. That half-breed is the son of... But it was too awkward, with Brooks in the car. To be honest, I didn't really want to talk to Mom right then. It would only lead to her asking me loads of questions I wasn't ready to answer. Maybe we could have a serious talk after the eclipse. Then I'd finally find out who my father was. Hondo was home when we got there, wearing down the carpet in the living room with his anxious pacing. He had a puffy eye and a bloodied lip. It's about time! Come on, Mom said, and we all went into the kitchen, where she pulled some wrapped burritos from the frigidaire and nuked them. Brooks pecked at the edges of her tortilla. I must have been starving, because I wolfed down two while Hondo told us his war story. Thankfully, it had been so dark in the bank when the lights went out that Hondo never figured out he was fighting an ancient Maya elf, or whatever it was called. And the security cameras hadn't picked up anything, because they had strangely malfunctioned. After we left, the intruder had run off. Hondo had pulled the alarm and stuck around to answer the cops' questions about the attempted robbery. What the hell was that little thing? He said. It had some serious moves. I mean, not as good as mine, but still. A wanted criminal, Mom blurted. Works for an underground organization, some kind of mafia. I couldn't believe how fast the lie came out. A mini mafioso? Hondo asked. Kind of like that wrestler, the Goblin. Remember him, Zane? Real small, but wicked fast. By the time we finished eating, Mom looked exhausted. We should all get some rest. We can talk more in the morning. She turned to Brooks. You'll stay here tonight. What? A girl spending the night? In my house? Then I realized I actually had no idea where Brooks went whenever she